ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Now, to start this morning's program, I want to take us up to the Tiwi Islands. Before Tropical Cyclone Fina hit the top end, we caught up with Chris Oliver, the project manager on the Tiwi Islands for Plantation Management Partners. He said staff on the plantation had been evacuated prior to the storm and that preparations were in place. Now, we haven't spoken to Chris since, so I gave him a call this morning to see how the plantations up there fared and to see what they are up to in the month or so since.
Yeah, Charles, at that stage we were in preparations and had evacuated everyone out and, you know, had the fears for the worst. And I have to say, luckily, the impact for us in our operations here was very limited. We were out of the brunt of the high wind gusts, probably by about 5 or 6 Ks. So our camp and infrastructure really was pretty much untouched. The new nursery that we've got with our seedlings in there, the 2 million odd seedlings, were all untouched, thankfully. But, you know, there was damage to other parts of the island, and some of our older standing acacia plantations were damaged a little bit further to the southeast of our camp area.
You mentioned the damage to those older acacia plantations. Let's start there. What did that damage look like? How much did it, you know, impact those plantations down there?
Yeah, so we had a couple of areas there which were, had received gusts going through them, you know, with maybe 30 to 40% damage of the standing trees. And then as we move further to the southeast from our camp down towards the Apsley Strait in direction of Warramyunga, we had complete 100% destruction of some of those standing areas. I was lucky enough to be able to take a flight home from post-Cyclone Fina there, and, yeah, it was complete. Everything had been snapped off or completely blown over with 100% destruction of those areas. It was quite scary, actually, when you're looking at it from above just to see the destruction that the wind can do.
Yeah, certainly. I could only imagine. What sort of economic impact or business impact has that had, that damage to those old acacia plantations?
Yeah, we're a majority of those plantations were deemed to be not viable for current operations. So some of them had been previously harvested and were in with regen on them, and the other parts were in a sort of a holding pattern, but they were quite old. So, you know, financially the impact wasn't quite as bad as it could have been, but it just does show the susceptibility of the landscape here to the environmental conditions. And, we're only talking about small areas relative to the area that we manage. So we've got about 30,000 hectares under management here. And the area that was damaged, you know, we're only talking maybe up to 2,500 to 3,000 hectares. So it's only a very small proportion. And luckily, as I said, it was very low financial impact. You know, there's other communities here on the island which were significantly impacted, you know, receiving damage to infrastructure and things like that, which was, you know, more of a concern to the local community.
It's been almost 2 months now since that cyclone did come through the Tiwi Islands and the top end. I guess in that period of time, what has the plantation been up to? What have they been working on as we've entered the new year?
Yeah, so, immediately after the cyclone went through, we had personnel helping the local community and opening up the roads. There was a lot of trees across the roads that need to be cleared off. We worked in with the Tiwi Rangers and the local council, the local police force here to open up the roads to Tiwi College, which had sustained quite a bit of damage, and to one of the other outstations down along that area there. That was, that took a good week of people working quite hard to get the fallen timber off the road. And then we also have, as part of our equipment, we have a good grader set up here. So we sent our grader following the cleanup to grade the road so there was better access. And that's sort of been a bit of an ongoing factor with trying to do a bit of cleanup around the place, all over, our areas. We've had trees come down.
So those efforts are still ongoing in some parts.
That's ongoing, yeah. So, we've had the combined part now, of course, that the wet season's well and truly kicked in. So things have become a bit more complicated. You have to deal with, a fair bit of water coming down and making sure you can get through areas. So it's sort of going to be a slow and steady part of, doing continual cleanups and just assisting where possible. As I said, the majority of the outstations and Tiwi College now has full access, from in respect to the cyclones, but it's just the natural or the normal wet season restrictions now which are in place around the islands.
Thank you for joining us today on the Country Hour.
No worries. Thanks very much, Charles.
That was Chris Oliver, the project manager on the Tiwi Islands for Plantation Management Partners.
Just a reminder, when the cricket's on the wireless,
whacks him into the members for six. What a shot!
We're still bringing you local stories and voices on the ABC Listen app.
On ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
My name's Charles Geary. Thanks for tuning in to the Northern Territory Country Hour. Time is 10 minutes past 11. Just a reminder, I'm keen to hear if you got any rainfall overnight over the past 24 hours. We've got a fair bit of rain over in the top end. Text in at 0487 991057. Now, when machines break down on a remote cattle station, it could mean days of lost production for pastoralists. At worst, the equipment could go down in an emergency like floods or fires. It's why, for nearly 20 years, Catherine couple Linda and Adam Blackwood have been on standby to deploy one of their skilled mechanics to the scene. And while technology has changed since they began their large-scale mobile mechanic operation, Adam Blackwood says sticking to fundamentals is what keeps the wheels turning in the bush.
Where's the furthest you've been with this job?
Broome, from Catherine to Broome. We're based in Catherine. We've been over to... been south of Mount Isa as well. That'd probably be the two extremes. Other than that, been to both corners, top corners of the territory in 48 hours. Yeah, so do cover a bit of country, yeah.
And how do you get to these places?
We do drive, predominantly drive, but I fly as well. We've got our own airplane. And also sometimes the stations will either send their own airplane in or helicopters come pick us up from a paddock or something like that, take us across to station lighting plant or a breakdown or something along those lines, yeah.
So why did you decide to get an aeroplane? What was the need for that?
Distance and time, and I've driven these roads enough. just to get more out of the day and to be in two places at once the best we can.
Tell me a little bit about the history of this aeroplane you've got. You said it was owned by someone pretty well known.
Yeah, I've now got the keys to Delta Victor Papa, and that was owned by... Peter Trembarth, now our local retired vet. It's not new to television or anything like that. It was the original Flying Vets aeroplane, and now it's still based at Pete's place now. So,
and what kind of jobs has it been doing recently?
We've been down the Barkly late last year to a couple of lighting plant incidents, well, issues I should say. While we're down there, we made use of the time down there, and we did a fair bit of maintenance on a few trucks and Toyotas while we were down there.
What are the kind of machines that you're working on when you go out to stations?
Pretty well everything from grounds care, light vehicles, a lot of Hiluxes, a lot of Land Cruisers, all your trucks, light, medium and heavy rigid trucks. We do road trains, we do road train trailers, earth moving as well, bobcats, telehandlers, forklifts, loaders, a lot of graders, the occasional dozer too. And a lot of lighting plants, station lighting plants, because obviously they run 24/7. So
if that went down on a station, that would be kind of the time that you would get the plane out and get down there quickly.
It ticks one of the boxes for sure. Obviously, lighting plants running a whole lot, vaccine fridges, food fridges, all the computers, everything to keep the station running. So it's pretty important, yeah.
It must be a relief when they see you rocking up.
Sometimes it just they never like seeing us.
So you've been visiting stations for how many years now?
Be 25, something like that, yeah.
How's it changed in terms of communication? I know Starlink is changing the way that people work remotely.
Yeah, Starlink's changed a lot of stuff. Google Mechanic is pretty high on a lot of people's list, which kind of sometimes helps, but sometimes makes it worse. It's easy for us to keep in touch with our office and to keep logistics on track. I remember when we started, we didn't even have a sat phone back in the day. I'd just head off into the distance and come back when the job was done. It might be a week, might be 6. Yeah, so it has helped. It's also got customers can get us jobs in from a more timely fashion, and we can react a lot more timely, yeah.
What about the equipment itself? It's changed. How has that changed the work that you're doing?
Well, we've got to keep up with the times pretty much. Try and stay abreast of it. Definitely the stuff that's relevant to us. Like we've gone from mechanical fuel pumps through to computer controlled, like common rails. And that's only, I say getting worse, but it's all for a reason.
Describe your team at the moment.
We've got a couple of apprentices. We've got a first year going on second year, and we've got a third year going on fourth year. We're pretty heavy on the mechanical side of things. We need to get the fundamentals down because we work on such a variety of equipment. A 1-inch piston or a 10-inch piston, it's all the same, it's just size. So you've got to get your fundamentals down and don't have shock and awe about the size of things or what's actually happened. But we need to understand the basics, or not the basics, so to speak, but we need to in-depth have a good mechanical aptitude for it. But to be interested in it is a big start, and not just interested, but have some ownership in what you're doing and a desire. Like, I don't think I've ever worked a day. Pretty easy to say, as long as there's fuel in the motor car and beer in the fridge, and my wife's done that for me every day, so...
That was Adam Blackwood, rural mechanic, speaking with Sam Parry in Katherine.
I'm Lockie Bear. I'm from Monagini Station in the Northern Territory. And you're listening to the ABC Country Hour.
We've got two announcements to bring to you today from the National Farmers Federation. Former AgForce Chief Executive Michael Guerin has just been appointed as the next Chief Executive of the NFF. Previous Chief Executive Troy Williams resigned last year, just 4 months into the role. Mr. Guerin says he's truly humbled to be selected for the position. In a media release from the NFF, he says, "I'm looking forward to taking a national lens to the agricultural issues I've rallied for on behalf of Queensland and New South Wales." Michael Guerin was previously the longest-serving chief executive of Queensland farming group AgForce. Now, that's just one of two announcements. The NFF has also announced a new agricultural awards program in partnership with Australian Community Media. The awards will celebrate farmers, leaders, agribusiness professionals across 5 categories and culminate in the naming of the Australian Agricultural Medalist in November. Now, talking about awards, as you may be aware, nominations have been open for the 2026 NT Rural Women's Award. And considering 2026 is the International Year of the Woman Farmer, as declared by the United Nations, thought it'd be a good time to catch up with last year's winner of the NT Rural Women's Award, Christy Hollis, a naturopath based in Palmerston. I asked her about how last year went and what's ahead in 2026.
Yeah, look, the year began with a nomination for the AgriFutures Rural Women's Award and being selected as a finalist for the NT. And then in April, winning that award, which was amazing and surprising for me, but it was also awesome to be up against some talented women down in Alice, actually. Since then, lots of engagements regarding the Rural Women's Award mingled in, obviously, with still working and developing my Women's Business Nurture and Thrive project down across the NT.
It was a big 2025. That's a lot on your plate there. I guess looking forward into the year that is now, 2026, what's on the horizon for you?
Yeah, look, this last year it was, you know, doing a heap of workshops and delivering to a lot of women, and a quarter of those being Indigenous women. So next year I want to build on that and build in a respectful space for culture and build community for those more rural and remote communities, focusing on women's health as I have been, supporting in the domestic and family violence space, and also in the topic of discussion around the town at the moment has always been maybe swept under the carpet a bit, but perimenopause. So supporting women through that sort of life stage as well. But developing resources for this, and whether that's doing tangible hands-on workshops and resources, but also looking at digital space so women can, you know, get hold of this information and trust the information wherever they are around the territory.
You've already obviously received quite a bit of recognition for the work you have receiving that 2025 Northern Territory Rural Women's Award. I guess after receiving an award like that, what gives you that drive? What brings you back to keep helping rural women across the territory?
Just seeing that you're actually part of a massive work network across the whole of Australia was a real eye-opener. When we were doing all the training and media training with the other nominations for the National Award, we actually could see how our project can be scaled up to national. So that gives me the drive and motivation to just keep doing this and being able to support women everywhere.
Now, the nominations for the 2026 NT Rural Women's Awards are actually coming up to close on January 30th. Now, for other women across the territory who might be looking forward to putting their hand up, why should people give it a go and throw their hat in the ring?
Look, yeah, 30th of January is the closing date for the NT, and it's such an amazing opportunity to see what next level you can go with your business and your project. You could be doing anything in the rural and remote area. It could be working with farming techniques. It could be working with people in the community for health as well, like similar to myself. But there's so many opportunities, great alumni to connect with, and not just now but into the future, be part of an amazing network through AgriFutures itself. And there's so many opportunities to grow your personal brand as well as your skills as a business owner as well.
And for women across the territory, I guess, what has been the biggest advantage or the biggest reward out of this whole process for you?
I think really giving the ability to see that you are part of the picture, because for me, I honestly didn't think how I would sit in with the agricultural space. But health affects everybody no matter where you are. So being able to connect the dots, and that for me was a really big eye-opener and has really given me the opportunity to go, yeah, I can really grow this space and thrive there as well. And it just gives that promotional space. So, yes, there's been interviews, there's been press, all of that stuff, but at the end of the day, it's the connections that you make with other people, and not just those through AgriFutures, but also those in the NT community, especially because we're such a smaller community to the rest of Australia, and it really gives you, you know, this is the land of opportunity in the NT.
That was the 2025 NT Rural Women's Award winner, Christy Hollis. Nominations for this year's award close on Friday, the 30th of January. And we've just got a text in here from Jason, Virginia. Last 24 hours between 7 a.m. to 7 a.m, 86.5 mil out there at Virginia. If you've got a rainfall total to share, be sure to text it in at 0487 991057.
ABC Local Radio. We're live, local, and ad-free wherever you are. Download the ABC Listen app and listen now.
Now to some croc news. Northern Territory Rangers said they've captured one crocodile per day so far this year. And they've removed a couple of huge crocs from the Wongai Falls earlier this week. One of those crocs came in at a whopping 4.9 metres long. Now, there's a photo of that croc on the ABC Darwin and ABC Alice Springs Facebook pages. The animal's absolutely enormous. It makes me wonder if I was a bit mad for swapping Alice Springs for the Top End. Acting Director of Operations at Parks and Wildlife, Sam Heisen, says the larger croc has been given to a contractor who will use it for breeding.
Quite a large crocodile. It's one of the larger ones caught in Litchfield for some time. It's certainly the largest one for the year. We've averaged one crocodile a day since the start of the year.
Now, you'll be soon heading to the newsroom and then back to the cricket. But let's have a quick look at the weather first. With me this morning from the Bureau of Meteorology is Rebecca Patrick. Rebecca, how are you this morning?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
We had some pretty good rainfall totals overnight in the Darwin and Palmerston areas. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we certainly did. Had 114 millimetres recorded at 11 Mile Nucky Lagoon there. Howard River reported 92 millimetres. Thorax Cemetery with 89. We've got a couple of sites at the Darwin Airport, and interestingly, one recorded 81 millimetres, most of that falling between 5 and 6 p.m., and then the other one, the official one, only recording 48 millimetres. So I guess that's tropical rainfall for you, variation across a small area.
How far away are those two recording points? That can't be particularly far, I imagine.
Yeah, they're basically on opposite sides of the airport. So, one's on the Stuart Highway and then the other's the other side where you enter the airport. Not far apart, but quite significant rainfall recorded in some places yesterday evening. Also a bit more broadly across the Top End, Sleisbeck recorded 50 millimetres, Mount Felix with 74 millimetres, and on the Arnhem Coast we had Maningrida recording 55 millimetres, so some pretty good rainfalls across the north over the last 24 hours.
A bit further south in the Katherine and parts of the Roper region as well, they looks like they got some pretty good falls as well.
Yeah, that's right. So, that Mount Felix with 74, also Roper River with 62 there.
In Central Australia, I had a look at the temperature gauge and some of the forecasts down there. That heatwave warning is still well and truly in place.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, we had a few stations recording 43 degrees yesterday and not getting any cooler today. We've got that heatwave warning current for the Simpson, Lassiter and Tanami district at the moment. So today the hotter temperatures are across the southern parts, but that is extending also into the Tanami. So those temperatures getting up around 40 to 45 degrees in some places across the southern and central parts over the coming days.
It looks like it's been pretty dry down there the past 24 hours. Is there any chance of some rain to provide some relief?
Unfortunately, we are forecasting some thunderstorms across the southwestern parts of the territory, but not expecting a lot of rainfall with those, unfortunately. So it could be some gusty winds and lightning associated with that, but not too much rainfall. In general, we're seeing that rainfall most likely the heavier falls across the Top End and through the Carpentaria district, but there is a chance of seeing some showers and storms further south through those central districts as well.
So just quickly, we can potentially expect some further rain overnight and this afternoon up in the Top End region?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly the Arnhem district could be fairly wet this afternoon. So there is a risk of some heavy rainfall with storms through that area. Possibly some heavier falls around the northern parts of the Daly district as well. But generally across the Top End and through that Carpentaria district, seeing fairly scattered showers and thunderstorms developing during the day.
Rebecca Patrick, thank you for joining us on the Country Hour today.
No worries. Have a good day.
That was Rebecca Patrick from the Bureau of Meteorology. That's all the time we've got for on the Country Hour today on our slightly shortened program. The last day of cricket today, so tomorrow we'll be back to our usual broadcasting. But we also have the 1 hour long stream at your usual 12:30 time today on the ABC Listen apps, on the ABC website as well. Plenty more rural goodness there, and I look forward to bringing it to you. My name's Charles Geary. Thank you for joining me today on the Northern Territory Country Hour.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.